daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day, another great week in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It is a great day when we commemorate the legacy of one of the greatest of all Americans, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who, by the way, I devote an entire chapter in my new book, God's Hand on America, to Dr. King. What does his legacy mean to us today? Are African Americans who are campaigning for Donald Trump and trying to organize an increasing number of black people, a lot of the polls show black support for President Trump approaching one-third in terms of approval. We'll be speaking with James Golden of MAGA Black and of the Rush Limbaugh Show a little bit later in the program about charges that Dr. King's legacy is actually much more to the left. I know that James disagrees, and there are many black conservatives who disagree. Many of those black conservatives were very much in evidence in Richmond, Virginia, earlier today at a massive, polite, respectful rally for gun rights. There was no violence. Let me put it this way. If you listen to clips from the gun march, and we will, and you compare them to clips from the woman's march over the weekend, they're spelling woman now with an X. I don't understand that. I know they want to get rid of the word man as part of the word woman, but X, how do you pronounce W-O-M-X-N? Jeremy, do you know? I don't know. I've heard people use, I know that you're supposed to say now, you don't say Latino or Latina, you say Latinx. And I know there are people who are saying that. But yes, if you have to ask the question, it just shows that, okay, boomer, we can deal with that. But the women's march was an entire bust. And does that reflect something about America? Yeah, it also reflects something about the tactics adopted by the Women's March. And the National Archives apologizes for blotting out Trump's name. I know that sounds like blotting out the name of God. It actually involves the name of God. There were signs in the original Women's March in 2017. Remember, this is before Trump had done anything. He was just inaugurated. Day after he's inaugurated, boom, Women's March. And they were carrying a lot of signs that said, God hates Trump. And the National Archives didn't cross out the name of God. They crossed out the name of Trump. Why? And why have they apologized for that? We will get to that as well. 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. First off, of course, there's big news on impeachment, because just hours ago, the president's defense team, and everybody knows by now that his defense team includes a lot of well-known people. It's led by Pat Cipollone of the White House and Jay Sekulow, who I've known for many, many years, who has a strong media presence, a radio show. He was the founding director of the American Center for Law and Justice at Regent University. Jay is part of the defense team. And then, of course, Alan Dershowitz, who's been everywhere just the last couple of days, has been a guest on this show more than a dozen times, regular guest on this show. And Alan is joining Ken Starr and Robert Ray, who were special prosecutors who went after Bill Clinton. And they just released, the president's defense team, a 117-page response to the articles of impeachment. The response is described by NPR as fiery, and it certainly is as strong. It is a response that questions the whole premise of the impeachment. And that, I think, is the right thing to do, because the core argument that is going to carry the day with enough Republican senators to allow the president to continue his term and go forward to the election and then face the electorate. The entire argument should be that, look, even if every factual detail that the Democrats have alleged is accurate, and as a matter of fact, I think most of the factual details alleged by the Democrats probably are accurate. Even if that is the case, this does not rise to the level of impeachment. And of course, the Democrats have an answer back for that. Let me give you a sample of how this is covered, not by conservative media, but by National Public Radio. And I do think that National Public Radio sometimes tries to get things up the middle and to play them fairly, but generally it leans to the left, as most media do. And they have headline, Trump legal firing accuses Democrats of dangerous perversion of Constitution. And decrying a rigged process that is brazenly political, President Trump's legal team accuses House Democrats of focus group testing various charges for weeks, and says that all House Democrats have succeeded in proving is that the president did absolutely nothing wrong. Now, of course, they have to put that in there because that's what the president wants. But frankly, they don't have to go that far, because every president has been accused of abuse of power, virtually every president. And there are very few exceptions. Certainly Obama was accused of abuse of power. Bush was accused of abuse of power. Clinton was impeached partially for abuse of power. That was one of the articles of impeachment they were trying to end up passing in the House. It didn't pass in the House, but he was accused of it perpetually. And George Herbert Walker Bush was accused of abuse of power, and Reagan was accused of, everyone's accused of abuse of power. I mean, you could say there have been some very, very ineffective American presidents who were not accused of abuse of power, but it's hard to think of them. I mean, James Buchanan committed abuse of power. So the idea that the president did absolutely nothing wrong is not necessary, because even if he did some things wrong, every president does things that are wrong, but that doesn't mean they're impeachable. The president's defense team sums up his impeachment as a dangerous perversion of the Constitution that the Senate should swiftly and roundly condemn. Lindsey Graham was out making the rounds on cable TV over the weekend. And Senator Graham indicated, he said, if my argument succeeds, and his argument is virtually the same as the one that I'm making here, which is that even if the president did everything wrong, there's no grounds for removal from office. He said, if my argument succeeds, there's no need for witnesses. Indeed, there's no need for even arguments, any further arguments. If the House charges do not include impeachable offenses, that's really the end of the matter. And the Senate should vote to acquit or even to dismiss. That's actually what Alan Dershowitz said over the weekend. What Lindsey said is, he said, look, we don't have the votes to dismiss. There are at least four Republican U.S. senators who won't vote right away just to dismiss the charges. So they are at least going to hear arguments. And then after they hear the arguments, and each side will get 24 hours to make arguments, after they hear the arguments, then they're going to vote on whether or not they take some witnesses. My guess is they will probably vote narrowly to take a limited number of witnesses. And I'm not sure why that's necessary, frankly, because what are the witnesses going to prove or reveal beyond what has already been charged? And if you're talking about brand new charges, well, that's not subject to this proceeding. In other words, this is a trial. You can't bring someone and put him on trial for murder, say, and then say, oh, yeah, and we have some different charges for you from 3 years before for another murder. No, you can't do that. that actually you can file later on. But in this case, they are limited now to talking about obstruction of Congress, which is an idiotic charge and is based basically on the fact that they didn't go to court to compel that the Congress decided not to go to court to compel witnesses to come forward that they wanted. They didn't get the witnesses they wanted. It is not going to hold up the obstruction of Congress. And then the abuse of power charge of impeachment at the first article of impeachment that was approved by the House of Representatives. Lindsey Graham had it out for Nancy Pelosi, and you'll be shocked to hear he didn't speak kindly about her when he was on Fox News over the weekend. Listen.
Democratic impeachment managers who say this is just a rush to get this over with.
Well, to my friends on the Democratic side, you know, I like Nancy Pelosi. I've known her for years, and I think she is a very religious person. But when it comes to Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi may pray for him privately, but she's orchestrated the Church of Holy Hell. From the time Trump has been sworn in to now, it's been one thing after another. Here's what I'd say to the House folks. You took 48 days to impeach this president. You did not allow him to call any witnesses. He could not have a lawyer present during the House Intel Committee. This has been a partisan railroad job, and you're asking for fairness in Senate. You violated every norm of what we do. It took 5 years for Starr to look at Clinton. Mueller looked at Trump for almost 2 years, and you took 48 days. So here's what I would say. The sooner this is over, the better for the country. We can get back to do the business of the American people and do things that really matter to them. I've been very consistent. I supported Mueller. I trusted him to be fair. This has been a political hit job. This is political revenge. And what they're doing to the presidency is a danger to the institution itself.
And finally, in 30.
Okay, that's on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, obviously. That's Lindsey Graham. I think he is correct. I think that the sooner this is over, the better it is for the country, especially because everybody knows what the results are going to be when the trial opens tomorrow. Tomorrow. Isn't that unbelievable? 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from today, the Iowa caucuses. And we're talking about this. Democrats argue that the very thing, that abuse of power is the very thing the framers had in mind, and that high crimes and misdemeanors spelled out in the Constitution isn't meant literally, but as a term of art. Over time, federal officials have been impeached without criminal accusations. That's true. If you go back and you look at impeachments, most of the impeachments that have succeeded, in fact, virtually all of them have been impeachments of federal judges. And some of those federal judges have been impeached for non-criminal activity. A common one, and it impacted one of the very first judges. In fact, he was the first judge. Judge Pickering was the first judge to actually be impeached. He was impeached for chronic drunkenness. And he was so soused at times when he would be sitting up there on the bench, he didn't know where he was. He didn't realize he was in the middle of a court. You can't have a guy officiating over courts who is so drunk he doesn't have an idea what's going on. Okay, so they impeached him. But is this that? Are we talking about this kind of high crime and misdemeanor, which is equivalent to chronic drunkenness? I guess they will try to make that argument. Trump's legal team says no president has been impeached without a criminal offense, and charging abuse of power is simply too subjective. It would alter the separation of powers to allow the sort of vague standard to be used to impeach the president. And concerning presidents, they're right that of the previous three impeachments, all alleged criminal behavior on the part of the president. The Democrats come back and say, yeah, but we've impeached judges for other things. And right now, for those other things, the answer from the Republicans is and it will be, we have the 25th Amendment. In other words, if we had a president who was as bad a drunk as Judge Pickering, or maybe as President Pierce, who had a drinking problem, then you could invoke the 25th Amendment, where the people around him in the cabinet, including the vice president, say the president's incapacitated. He can't function. President could be delusional, could be dangerously ill. You have the 25th Amendment for that, not impeachment. And the 25th Amendment, by the way, is every bit as difficult. In many ways, it's even more difficult because you have to get half the cabinet to sign on and say, wait a minute, this guy isn't well. He can't function right now. They don't want coups. The founders and the adopters of the 25th Amendment don't want coups. They want the government to be stable and reliable. We don't want to be Italy or Venezuela. The Republican brief argues that the articles of impeachment for obstructing Congress is invalid because of standing executive branch protections, which say that you do not have to always succumb because you're a separate branch of government to what the Congress wants you to do. And because the House did not pursue judicial recourse to force cooperation, which they could have done probably successfully, it just would have taken longer. They didn't want to take the time. Remember, it was very urgent until it wasn't urgent. And the reason that Nancy Pelosi delayed, I don't believe that the reason that she delayed is part of a conspiracy to help nominate Joe Biden. I don't think that Nancy Pelosi has any special commitment to Joe Biden, nor is it part of a plan to damage Senator Warren or Senator Sanders to keep them from winning the nomination. I know people on the Democratic left think that's why Nancy Pelosi delayed for a month before sending over the articles of impeachment. I think it's actually because they believe that the only basis they have for beating Trump is not on the issues. It's not on the economy, which continues strong. It's not on the issues of the way people live, where life for typical Americans has gotten better in the last 3 years. It's based on Trump's personality. And they believe that the impeachment crisis is a way to keep the focus on his personality. House Democratic impeachment managers responded to the Trump legal team's arguments today. The framers deliberately drafted a constitution that allows the Senate to remove presidents who, like President Trump, abuse their power to cheat in elections, betray our national security, and ignore checks and balances. They wrote, that President Trump believes otherwise and insists he is free to engage in such conduct again only highlights the continuing threat he poses to the nation if allowed to remain in office. The terminology cheat in elections and betray our national security, that, I think, is not proved. And it is certainly not proved in their articles of impeachment that they had approved. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Brett Stevens of the New York Times. He has written powerful columns, I mean very powerful columns, trying to shake people, particularly Democrats, out of their lethargy. Hey, watch out for Bernie Sanders. He could win. He could win the Democratic nomination. He could even, conceivably, argues Brett Stevens, win the election. And Brett Stevens, who is no fan of President Trump, agrees that Bernie Sanders would be an unspeakable, almost unimaginable catastrophe for the United States of America. I agree with him on that. He also writes about the future of the Republican Party. Look, I think the future of the Republican Party is a fitting subject to talk about, because assuming that President Trump wins the election, then that will be his last term. He can't run a third time. And it means the party will probably go in a somewhat different direction. Except, what happens if Trump, by some chance, loses this election? I think that might be a way that he extends his control of the Republican Party. How? We'll get to that with Brett Stevens of the New York Times coming right up.
This is going to be a little bit provocative.
The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, one of the possibilities here is that there are people in the Women's March who are marching and marching. And by the way, so charming and winning with their demonstration. I'm not sure what their demonstration actually is about. No, honestly, I'm not. Here's the way the Associated Press covered the women's marches over the weekend. Hundreds showed up in New York City. This is not me. This is the Associated Press, okay? Associated propagandists, as some people say. Hundreds showed up in New York City and thousands in Washington, D.C. for the rallies, which aimed to harness the political power of women. Although crowds were noticeably smaller than in previous years, marches were scheduled Saturday in more than 180 cities. If anybody went to a women's march, one of these women's marches in one of those 180 cities, and you experienced all the excitement, you can give us a call and describe it firsthand. 1-800-955-1776. The very first marches in 2017 drew hundreds of thousands of people to rallies in cities across the country on the day after President Donald Trump was inaugurated. That year's D.C. march drew close to 1 million people. Remember, that was where they first announced their intention to impeach President Trump. He hadn't done anything yet. He'd just been inaugurated. In Manhattan, on Saturday, hundreds of people, again, hundreds of people, gathered as part of a Rise and Roar rally at separate events in Foley Square and Columbus Circle. Today we will be the change that is needed in this world. Today we rise into our power, shouted activist Donna Hilton to a cheering crowd in Foley Square. Oh, wonderful. In California, the First Lady of California, whose name is Jennifer Siebel Newsom, she is married to Gavin Newsom, obviously, credited women for mobilizing against gun violence. Well, they've stopped gun violence entirely, haven't they? Creating the hashtag MeToo movement against sexual harassment and discrimination and taking back the Democratic majority in the House. As speaking of the Democratic majority, Brett Stevens of the New York Times. Brett, it is great to speak to you. Thanks for taking some time on this holiday to join us.
Happy Martin Luther King Day. Thank you.
Thank you. Same to you. And in the spirit of the I Have a Dream, there's an impossible dream that literally millions of Americans appear to share because they're sending money in to support it, which is the dream of a Bernie Sanders presidency. One of your most controversial columns, I think, of recent years, has been a column that says Bernie can win.
Well, I don't know if it's controversial. I mean, I think those of us who remember as long ago as 4 years remember how all the smart money was against Donald Trump winning, even as he consistently led in poll after poll. We kept saying to ourselves, well, his support has a hard ceiling. Once the primary season begins, he'll begin to fade. People will realize he's unelectable. But people were drawn to Donald Trump for many of the same reasons that I think people are drawn to Bernie Sanders. He has a sense of conviction. He's hated by all the right people. There's a quality in both men that they speak to the deepest beliefs of their fan base. And I think that is those are qualities that no other Republican had in 2016, and I'm not sure any other Democrat has this time around.
All right, and you talk in your column about Bernie being one of the very few Democrats who would actually have a real chance of turning around blue-collar white voters in states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, that the Democrats need to win back if they're going to have any chance of actually winning the election. I wanted to speak to you about something else, if I could.
Sure, please do. By the way, I say that not as an endorsement of Bernie. I hope someone else wins the Democratic nomination, but I'm just speaking it as a matter of probability.
You do agree with me, don't you, that a Bernie Sanders presidency would be a disaster for the country?
I think it would be a tragedy for the country.
Okay, tragedy, disaster, those are not ringing endorsements. Here, let's assume someone else is nominated and there's a close, hard-fought election and somebody else wins. Here is something that I've been hearing increasingly, and I want to get your take on it. A lot of people assume, okay, Donald Trump loses the election if he does, in 2020, and then that's the end of Trumpism. I would argue, and I know there are other people who are anticipating this, that Trump would not relinquish his control of the Republican Party, and he would be back starting immediately to run again to recapture the White House in 2024, which is perfectly constitutional.
The Grover Cleveland scenario here?
That's it. Yep.
Maybe. I mean, by then he will be, by 2024, he will be pretty long.
He'll be Bernie Sanders' age.
He'll be Bernie Sanders' age, but people age in a different way. I think Trump would look to put in someone in his mold into the White House, although that's a great question. I'm not sure. I mean, Trump also sees himself as a kind of a unique phenomenon in American politics. So
he not only sees himself, he is a unique phenomenon in American politics. And can't you imagine that he would continue the rallies? That, in other words, the first rally would be before the inauguration?
Well, help me out. When does Ivanka Trump become eligible to run for president?
She's eligible in 24, and so is Donald Jr.
But, well, there you go.
But you have to assume
that Trump businesses are family businesses, including politics.
I think that's true. You're assuming that President Trump would want to step aside.
Well, I do. Look, I mean, there is a scenario that I hear about that even if Trump were to lose the election, he might claim fraud and try to hold on to office.
What do you mean he won the election and he claimed fraud time?
Well, there you go. I mean, with this presidency, anything is possible. I still think that is fairly far-fetched, and I have a profound belief in the fidelity of the American Armed Forces to the Constitution and to the duly elected officers of the executive government. So I don't see that happening, but it's one of the reasons why I remain so unalterably opposed to Trump, because that scenario is really not entirely out of the question.
Okay, let me ask you this. Who do you think the most formidable Democrat would be to contest the election with President Trump?
Well, look, I think, let me not try to turn wishes into facts, but I think that Amy Klobuchar would be formidable in the sense that she denies Trump his most powerful argument, which is in effect that people have to vote for him whether they like him or not, because every member of the Democratic Party is kind of part of the crazy left. So in that sense, Amy Klobuchar, possibly Michael Bloomberg, although I have a hard time seeing him win the election. On the other hand, I come back to the point I made earlier. Don't discount Bernie Sanders. Don't discount the fact that the moment, if he should become the nominee, there will be no internal Democratic opposition to Sanders, that all he'll have to do is choose a running mate that that shores up one of his weaker bases, maybe by choosing Eric Holder.
Can you hold on for a moment,
yep.
Brett? I would love to come back and talk about Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump, how that plays out. We will get to that and more with Brett Stevens of the New York Times. I'm honored to come back with Brett Stevens, who has been with the New York Times as an op-ed columnist since April of 2017. His column appears every week in the Times, Thursdays and Saturdays. He came to the Times after a long career with the Wall Street Journal. And before that, Brett was the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. He's also the author of best-selling books and all-around indispensable voice about contemporary politics. We were just talking about Bernie Sanders and your column that says people are wrong to dismiss Bernie, as many of us including you, were wrong to dismiss Donald Trump before he won. In terms of the New York Times endorsement of Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, big two full pages, twin endorsement of those two senators. Are you a member of the editorial board?
I am not, and I'm on the more conservative side among the op-ed columnists there, so I had nothing to do with that choice.
Of course. How do you explain it? Why that choice for America's Journal of Record?
Well, they sort of decided that they had a kind of a split sense of fidelity, and they saw the two, as I read the editorial, I read it like any other reader, as the two likeliest candidates to take on, or the strongest candidates to take on Trump. But obviously, they're very different flavors. I mean, Warren is a pretty identifiably left-wing progressive, and Klobuchar is a much more centrist candidate.
Okay, don't you suspect that Elizabeth Warren would be very easy for Trump to beat?
Well, I think she's a weaker, politically speaking, a weaker version of Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton without the charm?
Well, I mean, leaving aside the personality issues, so many of her policies are so extreme, and she's so strongly identified with policies like Medicare for All or her own version of the Green New Deal. These are multi-trillion dollar programs that would require huge tax increases, never mind on the wealthiest Americans, but on Americans of sort of in the more middle-income brackets, that I have a hard time seeing her win the election. I think that if you're going to go for a progressive option, Sanders is a much better choice for taking on Trump.
Well, you know that Elizabeth Warren recently has said that she will now, on her first day, use executive authority to cancel all student debt that has been taken on to the federal government, which is...
Well, that's extraordinary. And she said that on the first day she's going to end fracking. Fracking is what has... I mean, it employs hundreds of thousands of Americans. It is what has made us essentially energy independent from, you know, the Middle East and other petro states. It's shifted the American energy balance away from coal towards natural gas, which has helped us reduce CO2 net CO2 emissions. It's a heck of an agenda for just destroying jobs for the sake of progressive shibboleths. And I think Americans would look pretty askance at that's sort of kind of aggressive redistribution.
Well, I think all of the people who have paid back their actual student loans, and particularly people who have paid back student loans or even portions of student loans recently, would feel outraged if all of a sudden with a stroke of a pen. And she's defending this right now. She's also attacking President Trump for appointing judges who are racist and homophobic and sexist. And I think that for most people, including a lot of people in the middle, this is one of the undisputed successes of the Trump administration, has been fairly distinguished and appropriate, originalist court appointments, no?
Well, that's exactly it. And I mean, I supported Kavanaugh's nomination, and I think Judge Gorsuch is an outstanding judge. And, you know, this tactic of the left of dismissing everyone they dislike as a racist or a homophobe or a sexist is not only ugly, but I think it doesn't do the left ultimately any big favors. If you want evidence of that, just look at what happened to the Corbynista movement in Great Britain. I think if the progressives or liberals want to succeed, make the policy arguments. Don't just call people names.
Amen to that. What would it, since you and I think agree that a Trump, first of all, it's a certainty that Trump will survive impeachment, probably survive impeachment greatly strengthened for his reelection campaign, and then win reelection. What does a Trump second term look like, in your opinion, Brett Stevens of The New York Times?
Well, look, you know, I have I'm a never Trumper, and I remain one. And I think a second Trump term will consolidate some of the worst aspects of Trumpism, especially as it concerns the manner of the presidency and the corrosion of the norms and institutions that have previously governed us and served, as it were, as a kind of the invisible constitution. So I look at it with a sense of alarm. But you know, as I was telling you on the break, you know, my nausea is sort of bipartisan these days, and I have a dwindling hope that someone who is of the center can still lead the Democratic Party and give us a spell of governance where, you know, I might not always agree with the policy, but at least I'll respect the office holder.
And your best hope for that, you think, right now is Senator Klobuchar?
Senator Klobuchar or Mike Bloomberg, I think, or even, look, even Joe Biden. I mean, in a Biden presidency, I will find myself vigorously disagreeing with the policy. But I think Joe Biden is an honorable man and a public servant who has some wisdom born of experience and born of a great deal of personal suffering, and I have great respect for that. So I would I think a Biden presidency would be a survivable event. America would look pretty much the same at the end of it as it does at the beginning. And a Klobuchar, a Bloomberg presidency might actually be good in some ways. Nothing that, you know, not for me the Reagan presidency, which is in my lifetime the best presidency I've known.
Agreed.
But certainly a decent one. And those are things to think about beyond the question of what particular policy set you happen to favor or not.
In terms of the future of the Republican Party, we were talking before about the idea that President Trump, even if he lost, wouldn't go away. If he finishes a second term, there's very serious discussion about grooming Donald Jr. to be his successor, or Ivanka. And
well,
in 30 seconds,
proving the theory of evolution right there. sorry, that was a bad joke. This whole business of families kind of controlling the presidency. I mean, it was one thing when the Bush family did. At least George W. Bush had a successful tenure, two-term governor of Texas before he became president. But the idea of the Trump family sort of assuming control of the Republican Party is the sort of thing that you think happens in developing countries, and certainly shouldn't happen here.
Brett Stevens, you can read him twice a week in the New York Times. Brett, may we be inspired with the legacy and the memories of Dr. King on this national holiday, and continue to be inspired even when political processes turn up leaders who may be somewhat less than inspiring. Later in the show, we'll talk about speculation that America is literally on the point of breaking up. Secession, really? That and much more in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.